The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
On today's episode, Kerry Oberbrunner.
I would look for good voices. I'll tell you what, my podcast, I'll tell you why I think it's smart. Because I'm not the one talking. I just said, I want to learn. So I have a 25-year-old metaverse architect. I have someone who's launching their NFTs. I have a blockchain woman from India who's an expert and just blew my mind. I would say just listen to some voices that you trust. And if people are asking for money or, you know, do this or do that, I think you kind of just put up some red flags.
Hey, welcome to The Dose, a show dedicated to deep and engaging conversations, highlighting individuals that are in the pursuit of authentic and courageous leadership, who approach life with insatiable curiosity, bold action, and common sense in these divisive and uncommon times. It's my hope you take something away from each and every one of these conversations and apply it to your own life, as we all intentionally attempt to become the best we can possibly be by living out our purpose and calling, committing to a life of service, and helping make this place better than we found it. I'm thrilled to have you listen to this great conversation with my friend Kerry Oberbrunner. He's been on the show before. It's been a while. He's finally back. He's earned a doctorate degree in transformational leadership, training over 250,000 authors, coaches, speakers, and entrepreneurs. He's an international speaker on personal growth, human performance, publishing, and business. The past 20 years, he's ignited over 1 million people with his content. What I really appreciate, Kerry, where he's going now, is he's a futurist creating solutions for integrating intellectual property with blockchain technology and NFTs. And you may be thinking, why are we talking about crypto? Why are we talking about blockchain? Particularly when you see, particularly in this last week, depending on when you're listening to this, but in the middle of May, crypto is in full panic mode. Right? And everybody's kind of anger, fear, vitriol, shock, panic. And I do think that we're heading for a pretty nasty recession if we're not in one already. I think layoffs are right around the corner. I think you're going to see, you are seeing the largest monetary tightening in the history. So equity markets are in free fall, bond market, oil, all these things. There's a lot of uncertainty, but I think the more that you understand blockchain, the more that you can keep calm and carry on, because it is about being the composed force in a chaotic situation. You've heard me say that time and time again on the show. That's what leadership is. And so that's what I want people to get away from this conversation, is to stick to your framework, filter out the noise and focus, learn everything you can about the blockchain and the opportunity that's going to present itself. And I think Kerry is a great person to talk to in this time. He has a great podcast out there called Blockchain Life, fascinating conversations with the leading voices on those topics of crypto, NFTs, smart contracts. It's a great place to start if you're new to this area, and I'm excited for him to come on the show and talk about it. All right, check out the links to his website and to his podcast, and let's get on with this great conversation with Kerry Oberbrunner here on The Dose. Kerry, welcome back to Dose of Leadership. It has been almost 8 years. You believe that?
It's crazy, man.
Did I do the math right? 2014? Yeah.
You did. It was 8 years. And I'm not good at math.
Yeah,
but it is good.
I think when you came on in 2014, we were certainly talking about leadership and life and how do we kind of, you know, can turn what we love and our dreams into reality. Mm-hmm. You're still doing that. I was reading your opus on your website. I love your opus, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
How long did that take you to do that? I was curious.
It took me, put it this way, the preparation took me a lot of time, but once my coach just said, you sit your butt down and do it, it actually kind of came out over a weekend. But what's interesting, Richard, is I just updated it last night for the first time in 5 years. So
did you? I'm anxious to see it.
Yeah, I infused some Web3 and just to get ready for the times.
Yeah, you know, and I was reading it because I've been at an inflection point. I've been kind of in this, and maybe that's why you kind of transition to, you know, you stopped Ignite Souls and started this blockchain podcast. maybe you were at an inflection point when, and I'm thinking you are, if you revisited your opus, because I was doing kind of the same thing. And I've been for about 5 or 6 months, I've been sitting here going, what am I doing with the show? What do I even do?
Yep.
I like talking about leadership, but I'm, you know, to be quite honest, I'm kind of tired of talking about team building.
Sure.
And empowerment. Not that those are bad things or that they're boring things, but it seems like the world is that there shifting. Are bigger challenges than that. And and it doesn't mean to discount people struggling with team building or because it's a challenge. But does that make sense what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I think we are on the precipice of, in my opinion, the largest shift that I can think of in human history. And it definitely sounds epic that way. Yeah.
It sounds melodramatic,
but you know the stars are aligning even technologically to, you know, onboard us into some pretty crazy stuff.
It does. On one hand, it's unsettling. Mm. On the other hand, it's very exciting. But I know that with growth, we have to experience some sort of pain and some unsettling, or something has to happen, right? Like whatever we're doing, and I'm talking just in a macro sense here, whatever we're doing, and it comes down to us individuals.
Oh yeah,
it's not sustainable, right? I mean, something has to give. And I want to be educated. I want to be on the forefront of that because I don't want, because even though it's unsettling for me, I don't want to just sit by the wayside. I want to do something. And that's when I kind of went down this blockchain rabbit hole in October. And I started feeling a sense of hope, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't know if the same thing happened to you or not, but that's kind of what happened to me probably around October, I think, is when I really started going down this hole.
Let's dive into that. By the way, I did shoot you quick emails with the chart because I had a tough time uploading it, but just check that out.
Sure, let me pull it up.
Yeah. So what I think happened, Richard, is that our world began to lose hope in centralized entities. So I'll unpack that for a moment. 2008, housing market crash. Remember that? I mean, I was just starting to become an investor. Because before that, I didn't have any money. But the point is that we had trust that people were saying what they were doing and doing what they were saying with loans. And what happened was because all the information was centralized, we found out that they were cooking the books, that it wasn't what it appeared. And as a result, this was just before Bitcoin. And what happened was we lost trust. We said, whoa, you know, this is a global thing that's affecting now the whole world. And maybe the ledger wasn't as accurate as it pretended to be. In other words, for people who don't know blockchain, I heard about it for years. I didn't even know what it was until really the last year I took a deep dive. But the blockchain is essentially a public digital ledger. Okay. So think of it as a ledger that's immutable, meaning you can't change it. It's distributed, which means that it doesn't reside with one entity, one power. It's actually distributed to computers all over the world called nodes. And so for you to quote, cook the books, for you to change truth, you would actually have to hack about 51% of the computers in the world, which is nearly impossible. So what happened was blockchain was around since the 90s, but there was no reason for it. We didn't need it. There was no use case. Well, along comes this dent in the public trust. That was number one. Number two was voting. When 2016 happened, when 2020 happened, a lot of people on both sides of the parties said, we can't trust the voting system. In other words, truth was again being hacked. Mm-hmm. And people began to say, we can't trust that our votes even count. Well, you take away that, right? Now you went currency in 2008. Now you went government in 2016 and 2020. So now doubt is really there and the erosion of trust and truth. Well, guess what solves that? Blockchain. Blockchain allows you to say, I cast my vote and I am verified and it's publicly recorded and it can't be changed. And so then the third global hit of trust was Corona.
Yep.
Not to throw any countries under the bus, but there was one country in particular that kind of hid the truth. We don't have Corona. It's not as bad as you think. And what happened was the whole world basically said, you lied, or you,
right.
Yeah, you changed the truth. Again, blockchain solves this. So you have three global hits that basically says, look, blockchain can solve these problems. And now I think all of a sudden the world is lining up with AR, augmented reality, virtual reality, 5G, crypto, metaverse. It's like all these unique, pretty cool technologies, AI, artificial intelligence, they're now all lining up and now they're all integrated. That to me is the big linchpin, blockchain. That, you know, these things have been around. I mean, I remember VR when I was a kid, you know, going to the mall and it was like the hot thing. But what's happening now is the interoperability of all these technologies and the fact that 5G can handle the speed. And I'll tell you what, Richard, NFTs too. When I started exploring this, I'm like, oh my gosh, the whole world's about to change.
Yeah, same thing happened to me. And I just always knew on the periphery about these, about blockchain, about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Again, just start a deep dive. Again, once you go and you, in the community, you hear the term rabbit hole, everybody says, because there is no better term, because once you go down, it's like there's no way to escape it, to come back. And I'm still having trouble, as we were talking pre-recording, explaining this to the everyday people. So hopefully some of this, what I would like to make sure that we get out of this is that at least understand the basic concepts. You said a lot there. And I think first and foremost, you hear the term Web 2.0, Web 3.0.
Yeah.
what is that? I mean, I think just a little bit on the surface, because I think, you know, we're coming to the end of Web 2.0. That's what we've all been living for the last 20 years is Web 2.0, really, right? Which gives us the ability to, and it's been great, right? To socially interact, to do these transactions, but the transactions are still kind of done the old school way, i.e. there's a lot of third party involvement, which has made a lot of people a lot of money in the Web 2.0 space, right? Like all these businesses that we see and everything that allow these transactions to happen. And so when we're going to Web 3.0, we're barely scratching the surface. This is what's so exciting about it. I don't even think anybody in the space really fully appreciates how dynamic of a change this is going to be. I mean, this is like where we were. Remember in 1999 when everybody was getting into the tech, you know?
Yes.
Amazon was new, right? And everybody's like, oh, it's buy books online, pshaw, you know?
Yeah.
And all this stuff. And then in 2000, Amazon crashes down to $6. That's kind of where we're at, right? Yeah. Where a lot of the stuff that we're seeing in the Web 3.0 space, in my opinion, is there's a lot of noise out there. There's a lot of junk, just like there was in the Web 2.0 days in the very beginning, all these hot new tech stocks, right? And maybe 85% of them were kind of junk. And then the big crash happened, which is going to happen here in Web 3. And then who survives at that? That's what's really exciting to me.
Exactly.
I want to be in that spot to like, who's the next, you know what I mean? Amazon equivalent where you can get in at $6 or whatever and
ride the wave. Yeah.
In 2040. You know, as you and I are in our 70s or 80s, you know, it's, you know what I mean? It's just going to be completely
Absolutely.
Different.
Yeah. Couple things on that. I like to describe, because my parents are 70. And so I sit with them and I got to explain these things. And, you know, imagine being 70 today. I mean, you've seen massive shifts, even Gen Xers like us. I mean, I didn't grow up on cell phones. So, here's the best, simplest way to describe Web 1, Web 2, Web 3. You'll see that chart. which I could go into a lot of detail, but I'm not going to. Instead, I'm just going to read one single row. And this is from my new book that comes out in the fall called Blockchain Life. And the whole point of it is to help people onboard, because there's a lot of people that are going to be, quote, scared. I've even had some Christians reach out to me and be like, whoa, you know, this is end times. This is satanic, you know, and yet there's crazy cool opportunities. I mean, there's a church in Oklahoma called Life Church that already has a church in the metaverse, and people are having life change. So I think it's a tool. This whole thing is a tool, and we can use it for good or evil. But here's how to describe Web 1, Web 2, Web 3. Web 1 is they create, they own. And what I mean by that, I'll use Domino's Pizza as an example. If Domino's Pizza in Web 1, let's say 90s, created a website, it would have been static. You would have gone there once. You would have seen their menu. You couldn't purchase it. You'd probably have to call them, maybe use a credit card, maybe, you know, who knows. But the point is that Web 1 was that Domino's created the website, they own it, end of story. Web 2 is we create, they own. So what I mean by that is we created the videos, but YouTube owned them. We created we created the podcasts, but Spotify, iTunes, you know, unless we were careful, own them. We create the pictures, but Instagram and the fine print owns them. Facebook owns our content. In other words, the social dilemma that incredible documentary came out and basically said, look, folks, you are the users. In other words, they use drugs users as a phrase, but you are the Facebook users. In other words, there's these big tech companies that are profiting off of our data. And so along comes Web 3, and Web 3 is we create, we own.
Right.
So, you know, again, it's a big world to describe these differences, and my chart goes into major detail. But even just to read that one row, and in Web 3, we're the ones who are going to own the NFTs, meaning I got a son, he's a gamer, he plays that game. He earns and spends and achieves and, you know, different weapons, skins, you name it. But when that game is done, Fortnite owns it.
Right.
And if he wants to take that digital assets to another place, i.e. a metaverse, it can't travel. Now Lego invested $2 billion in the metaverse 2 weeks ago. Napa Auto Parts, Nike, Coca-Cola. I mean, you name it. Everybody's jumping in the metaverse because they understand that this is the new digital world. And I would argue, Richard, that it's changing reality. I mean, this thing, you know, unlike the 90s where you could kind of like go to the internet, visit it, now you're actually going to be the internet. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds weird, but it's an embodied experience. People are already getting married in the metaverse. Someday, I mean, again, there's going to be good. There's going to be evil. You'll be able to go into the metaverse. You can have, you know, multiple affairs with multiple people. I mean, there's going to be some negative things, but there's also going to be some crazy opportunities. Like, imagine taking your fifth grade class to the moon and you literally go to the moon. You know?
Yeah.
You're not going to be learning about things. You're going to be experiencing.
Yeah. Well, those things are all so very exciting.
Yeah.
But even like the simple things of a transaction of buying a car or even real estate. When I explain this, sometimes people are like, really?
Yeah.
I got a lot of friends that are realtors, and I'm like, you know, and look at all the paperwork they have to do to do this. The blockchain, in theory,
yes.
You and I, like, you have a house, and you have the title, and your title is an NFT or it's something, it's on the blockchain. It's whatever. It's like, it's the only one in existence. It's the only one that can exist. It's verifiable.
Yes.
It can't be forged. I know it's Carrie's title.
Yep.
In theory, I could send you money for the house.
Yep. Through crypto.
Through crypto.
Digital wallet. Absolutely.
There's no need for a sitting in escrow.
Right.
Because the transaction will not happen until I verified that the ownership is transferred to me and it's mine. And then, so you know what I mean? So is completely gone.
Yes.
And how could that be? I mean, it's scary to think that you're a title company or everything else and like the lawyers and everything else. But in theory, that could happen and it could be 100% safe and legit, right?
Yes.
I mean, in theory, that could happen.
Oh, it is happening. So check it out. Imagine someday I'm like, oh, my neighbor down the road has their house for sale. I've always wanted that. I'll strap on an Oculus goggles. I'll tour the house via my goggles. I'll be able to walk through the house, pick up different objects even with haptic technology, even feel it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, on my way out of the tour, I'll say, you know what? I want this house and I'm going to transfer it. Like you said, and they transfer the NFT. We're done. Like, forget going to credit checks, liens on the house. All that will be done via a smart contract that's built into the NFT. It's going to change everything. And then you look at lawyers, everything.
Yeah, the power, that's the term. The power of the smart contracts, I don't even think people fully appreciate how revolutionary that is. From transacting cars to houses.
Even self-funding charities.
Self-funding charities?
Yeah, where today we have to say, well, you know, where's my money going? And is it really paying for the CEO? And what is being used with that money? There's this thing called DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations, that are the governance for Web3. So we'll be able to create a DAO for human trafficking in Philippines, and you'll be able to contribute, see what happens if you reach certain thresholds or either or statements. Mm-hmm. Actions are going to happen. Like, for example, we hit this benchmark of giving, boom, money's released. Richard, take this. This is a crazy example. Okay. There's a place in the world right now that has set up a DAO so that as you're driving in that community, if you're a taxpayer in that community, you can press a button when you go over a pothole, right? So you're driving on your road and you're like, oh my gosh, that pothole, I wish they'd fix it. You pull out your phone, or your passenger does, they press a button. It tells the DAO that there's a pothole. They dispatch the asphalt company. It's paid for by the tax dollars, and it gets filled. I mean,
it blows you away. And the power of DAOs, too. I think the one example for me that really turned a light bulb on for me was, I think, last fall when Sotheby's was putting up one of the original copies of the Constitution for auction.
Yes.
And a DAO entered themselves as a potential someone wanting to purchase this. And the DAO was comprised of, I don't know how many individuals, but it was a group. And so going back to your Web3, We Create, We Own, here are a handful of individuals who have invested in this DAO. They are members of this organization, if you will, a decentralized organization that has a say in everything. And that DAO, with those collected assets, gave a run for the money of the traditional person who has a bunch of money, that, you know, the billionaire who has all this money and an eclectic collector. And here's, me and you could theoretically own this piece, you know, and maybe I only put $1,000 and maybe you put in $50,000, but we're still members of the DAO, right?
And
maybe you're a
us an NFT that says
they could issue an NFT,
right? Oh my gosh, this gets so excited. So let's say that they broke down the donors into $1,000 contribution, and I like your 50,000, 1,000. Let's say I have 50 NFTs. Well, as this raises in value, you know, the royalties on these NFTs. So if someone's like, well, dang, heard about that. I want that. I want Richard's NFT. Well, if you sell that NFT for the rest of your life, you get 10%.
Well, that's the power of the smart contract. Yeah, great. You brought that up. And same thing even with real estate. Like, say I turn my house into an NFT, the real estate, the title, the NFT. Or my property. Maybe it's a family of my grandfather's.
Yeah.
He bought an 18 farm from 1850. And I'm like, it's getting to the point now that, oh my God, I want to sell this. I can't carry it on anymore. If it's an NFT and I sold this and then that's how it sold forevermore, this real estate. Or it's like, you know, I've built up this legacy and I want my grandkids to be able to experience it. I can pass it along, and here and forevermore, whoever owns this NFT will always get royalties, whatever we put in the smart contract. You know what I mean?
And that's
will always get whatever percentage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why as a publisher and here's
or an artist or anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's some confessions, Richard. So as a publisher, I started seeing this happen. It was about last March. Okay. So about a little over a year ago. I started to see this and I'm like, oh my gosh, this can change everything, including publishing. I started to tell my company these things, and a third of them thought I was nuts.
Right.
A third of them thought I was crazy. Like, what is Carrie doing? You know, is this wild idea? Last fall, about a third of them left. It was tough. I mean, this was tough. You know, I love these people. And it was tough. But that's how much I believe in this, because I got a whole bookshelf of books right here from different authors. But imagine that C.S. Lewis book. If C.S. Lewis would have had NFTs, he would have attached, or the publisher would have attached, an NFT to that. And that book passes hands. And C.S. Lewis's heirs forever would get royalties. So you think about authors or even podcasters. There's a podcast right now that has turned their episodes into NFTs.
Oh, have they?
Yeah. So I mean, this is pretty slick, where you could have your super fans and you release these things as NFTs, and then the NFTs could have off-chain benefits.
Yeah.
So for example, let's take that Eiffel Tower, or not Eiffel Tower, pick some hotel out there, Hilton Orlando. And I'm like, gee, I can't buy that hotel. Oh my gosh, that's so expensive. But what I do is I invest a little bit of money, and now I'm part owner, like very small little bit. Well, if they issue that as an NFT, they might say, hey, twice a year, you can redeem that as partial owner for a suite. So now I walk in and I literally open up my MetaMask, scan it, and they're like, great to have you, Mr. Oberbrunner. Thanks for being an owner. We appreciate you. Enjoy your suite. Here, take it with your family. You know, it's that type of thing.
It made me think of an example when I saw the power of NFTs, because I think people get scared by NFTs because they see
JPEG art.
You know, JPEG art, let's see the Bored Apes thing or something. Yes. Like, what is this? That's not me.
Yeah.
But think of it in this way. What if this was 1994.
Yeah.
And you loved a band called Nirvana, and you were a super fan of Nirvana.
Yeah.
And you're like, God, I love these guys. I go see them down at my local pub. These guys are going to be something. I don't know. And people like, you know, I still like, you know, Whitesnake. I don't know about these guys, you know, whatever. And you stick with them. And then they're like, hey guys, if NFTs are around, in theory, they can say, hey guys, we're trying to produce an album here.
Yes.
It's got 12 songs. We need your help. We're going to turn them into NFTs. All you super fans, you know, you 300 guys have been with us, you know, for the past 2 years. We're going to create this new album. We need your help. Do you want to invest in our new album?
Yes.
And you got these 300 super fans.
Yes.
Everybody's putting money in. They own those 12 songs that come out. Then, you know, whatever, that band takes off, and one of those 12 songs becomes Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Yes.
Right? And then you forevermore, because you were a 300 super fan, you own Smells Like Teen Spirit here and forevermore and getting the royalties off of that. Until,
that's crazy.
Can you imagine? That's the power of when you say, we create, we own. That's yes. what can happen with NFTs, right? As
absolutely.
An art, from an artist example.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just a brilliant.
I've yeah. never thought of that, Richard. It's absolutely true. And here's the cool thing about Web3. The same way your brain just thought of that, there's these entrepreneurs all over the world that now that the centralized entity no longer has power, they're thinking of massive use cases, just like you thought of. I mean, there's people that are literally like, oh my gosh, we could think of this use case that'll help these people around the world, or, you know, bring clean water here and this and that. And so what I think is really happening is the digital renaissance, where just like we saw the Renaissance back, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, and it kind of like opened people's mind, and then all this creativity happened. We are escalating because technology, I mean, Richard, what's happening in the medical field? I mean, I don't know if people realize this, but it's like you have prosthetic limbs today that have brain computer interface where you yeah. actually can now think of moving your leg and it moves. I mean, these aren't monkeys are playing Pong with their mind.
Yeah, like, it's crazy.
You know what I'm saying? So I think that it's tremendously exciting. That's why I love what you were honest about with your amazing podcast. You're like, hey, leadership is important, but imagine being a leader in Web3.
Yeah. And,
you know, maybe you could merge it or something.
Well, that's what I've been kind of thinking. Like, I mean, there's obviously needs for, you know, leadership is universal no matter what's happening.
Yes.
And that's what I've been kind of, my inflection point has been like, well, how do I lead in this new, because I've been reading, I talked a little bit about it on the show, but even, have you ever read The Fourth Turning? I can't remember the.
Oh, I remember about this. Yeah. I didn't read that book, but I know what you're talking about.
Basically, a Cliff Notes version, it's basically a study of the patterns of history.
Yes.
Right. And how no matter, and I was listening to a podcast right before this one when I was in yes. the shower, and with this guy, I forget this guy's name. I want to get him on the show. I'll think about it in a second. But yeah. he says, our problem is we're always looking at our lifespan.
Yes.
And we think, you know, and the New World Order really started in 1945. Mm. Right. But no matter what, and that always happens, there's always these series of new world orders, and these new world orders usually happen with something big.
Yes.
Wars usually are involved. Major financial crises are always involved mm-hmm. and everything else. And basically what happens is there's a huge disruption that usually lasts a long time.
Yeah.
Right. And it usually lasts about 80 years. There's these four 20-year blocks where these things happen, where you have. And that's why I call them the fourth turning. So you've got these 20-year turnings, and there's 80-year cycles, 80 to 100-year cycles. Mm-hmm. And if you look back in history, for example, you mentioned the financial crisis of 2008. That was the beginning of a new 20-year cycle. So mm-hmm. we're in the what we call the crisis phase. Mm-hmm. And if you look at what's happened from 2008 to what we're experiencing right now, it's like you can tell we're in some sort of
crisis
phase where individuals and countries are spending more than they're making. Almost everybody's doing that, right? And that's repeated itself throughout history, where people mm-hmm. spend more than they make.
Global pandemics,
yeah. Internal conflicts, you know, yeah. Divisions are happening within countries. It's certainly happening here in the United States, right? We, you know, the moderates are in the middle. People like you and me are going, sure. Hey, let's just kind of talk about it. Yeah. No, you're either on my side or on this side,
sure.
right?
Sure.
Pick a side. Right. That happened in the 30s. It happened in World War II. Pick a, you know, where you yeah. saw 6 to 8 democracies go towards dictatorships. Right. World wow. War II happened. So, but you go 80 years back, it was the Great Depression, World War II. You go 80 years back from the Great Depression, World War II, it was the Civil War. You go 80 years back from the Civil War, it was the Revolutionary War. And you can continue this go on in history. And so we're in one now. We're in the crisis phase. The good news is at the end of the crisis phase, there's this period of abundance and an awakening, right? Where,
like that Renaissance concept, right?
Like a Renaissance type thing.
Yeah.
Hopefully. And that's kind of where I'm at. And this is my long kind of answer to your question about leading within the Web3 space is that, okay, I can't do much about my government spending too much money. I can't do much about the internal conflicts except have conversations like you and I are having. Yes. I try to do my part. But there's going to be some more pain here. You can't deny it just from the financial aspect. Just look at the financial aspect of it, right?
Fiat currency China.
The fiat currency.
Crypto, yeah.
Right. And if we're on the cutting edge of the crypto space, at least there's going to be opportunities, right? And right. So that's kind of where I want to be. I said, okay, how can I? Because that is going to be part of the Renaissance phase.
Yes.
You know, when we get into the 2030s and the 2040s, and you and I are getting into the fourth quarter of our lives, I want to be on that forefront edge of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more that you can embrace this kind of idea, I think that the better off. To me, it feels like you're doing something positive. Again, to use the powers of good instead of evil. And yes. I don't want to be a victim on the sideline and this and that. So I guess that's where I want to ask you is like, what do you recommend somebody? And I'm so excited you got a book that's coming out because I think it's going to tap into that market that we're talking about here. It's like, how do you get people more confident about Web3 so it's not a mystery? So I'm waiting for your book to come out. What do you suggest that we do now for someone listening to this go, okay, where's a good place to start? Because as you and I know, that rabbit hole can lead to a lot of different places and it can get so overwhelming because you could just spend a lifetime studying DAOs. Exactly. You could spend a lifetime studying NFTs.
Yes.
You could spend a lifetime studying DeFi, you know, decentralized finance. Where do you suggest somebody start, I guess?
Yeah. So I'm gonna have them start with a couple things. One is there's an article. It's not the best article, but it's certainly one that I think after I read a lot of articles and books, it says, this is the title. If you're waiting for the metaverse revolution, you already missed it. Okay.
Oh, I read that.
Did you read that one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It talks about a hybrid verse, because here's what I want people to realize. Right now, people are like, the metaverse is either all good or it's all crazy. It's a scam. And what I want people to realize is like right now, Richard and I and the listener are actually in the metaverse.
Right.
Because I'm not physically with Richard. In fact, I don't think physically.
Well, we've never met.
Nope. So right now I'm talking to this little pixelated screen, but we're having emotion and energy and truth, and it's exciting. People are going to listen to it as a digital file. And so what I want people to realize is like, okay, you are right now part of the metaverse. Therefore, you might as well say, how can we use it? So to me, that's already a big step if people can just look at that.
I like that.
All right, because otherwise they're going to get this, I'm not in, I'm not going to strap on VR goggles. You don't have to, okay? If you're on Zoom, you're part of the metaverse. If you have a digital phone, you know, you're paying with your Starbucks app, you have been part of the Web3. So that's one thing. Secondly, read that article. Thirdly, here's what I'm doing. I said, you know what? I've been in the publishing business for 20 years. You know, started out as a pastor, wrote books on the side. My webinars stopped working about 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, like webinars were, oh my gosh, I'm going to carve out my whole day so I can be here ready for this. And people would show up and people would get, you know, transformation. Well, 3-4 years ago, Amazon ads, you know, and all this stuff. So I really was stopped reaching people and igniting souls, but I couldn't put my finger on it. I'm just like, guys, I feel like something's going on with the internet, but I don't know what it is. And so now what I'm doing next week, I'm flying to Phoenix. I'm recording in VR for the Oculus.
Nice.
A course on publishing.
Cool.
So I'm literally going to teach publishing where you now go into the, you strap on your Oculus and I'm there in VR and I'm literally coaching people on how to publish. So there's an example that I said, okay, as a business owner, how am I going to wade into this? What I don't think you should do is get all crypto crazy and NFT crazy and ride these hype. Because to me, the hype is going to just
agree.
Die. Yeah. And then 100%. When it dives, you're like, oh my gosh, see, I knew it was junk. No, you got to look past the hype and get into the use case. I mean, they're now training doctors. I just met with my shoulder doctor and he's like, Carrie, we're having AI do surgeries with us now. Like every industry is being affected right now with Web3. And if they're not, they're going to be obsolete. So I would encourage people, great books, The Internet of Money, Andreas Antopoulos. The Internet of Money, 1, 2, and 3. He's a balanced guy. He never asks for money. He's just going to show you that, whoa, there's this whole other currency that's happening and it's going to affect everything. I would look for good voices. I'll tell you what, my podcast, I'll tell you why I think it's smart, because I'm not the one talking.
Yeah. Bringing some great experts there. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I just said, I want to learn. So I have a 25-year-old metaverse architect. I have someone who's launching their NFTs. I have a blockchain woman from India who's an expert and just blew my mind. I would say just listen to some voices that you trust. And if people are asking for money or, you know, do this or do that, I think you kind of just put up some red flags.
Yeah, that's great advice, because there is a tremendous amount of hype in there. And that's why I kind of reminding people, certainly people of our age, of just remember the hype of the
dot-com, like you're saying.
Dot-com bubble, right? Where, you know, in 1999, 2000, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, and you can watch a TikTok video, you know, and you can get bombarded with people saying, here's how you can make a ton of money creating NFTs and flipping them and this and that. Don't go down that route.
No.
No way. Me neither. And I think that, and I'm not, you know, putting everything into Bitcoin or Ethereum or this or that, but I have started investing in Bitcoin and Ethereum and everything. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to start putting some money in here, just like dollar cost averaging, you know, just it's part of my portfolio now. And I'm going to ride it out because I'm playing a long game. I'm not trying to get rich next week. I'm trying to see where I'm going to be in 2035 and 2040, right?
Because I like that.
And so though I agree with what you said, start learning. And I think your podcast is a great one. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was excited to bring you on, because I haven't really seen a lot of podcasts that approach it like you do. There are that do it.
I like, you're right. We run in circles together and, you know, with different influencers and authors. And there's a lot of, I'll tell you what, Richard, there's a big fall that's going to happen. And I'll tell you.
Agreed.
I'll tell you what I mean by that. I spoke with a guy who is, you would know him, and he and I privately chatted the other day, and I said, don't you feel like there's a lot of internet marketers that are totally struggling right now, and they're just like trying to get their last squeeze out of people?
I was just thinking about this.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
It's like they realize that all the Web2 stuff isn't working anymore, but they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so scared. I'm just gonna act like it's all working, and I'm gonna sell my people all this stuff and have 100%. Enough money and pull the wool over their eyes. My crowd will realize I haven't sold anything in a long time. I'm working with private clients on their books, and the reason why is because I feel like it's hypocritical for me to sell something that, you know, what I'm going to do is you ask, what are people doing? You can be a consumer, a collector, or a creator in Web3. That's kind of my thought.
That's right.
You can be a consumer, a collector, or a creator. I'm putting all my chips on creator.
Yeah. I love how you play that. I never looked at it that way, but you're absolutely right. And if you are a collector, I think what a great opportunity, because if you, I'm not a collector, I understand the collector mind space.
Sure.
But that's, I think that's where a lot of the hype, is around the collector piece, because, but it is exciting because just like the example I gave of
buying something real small and boom.
And you know, whoever the next Nirvana is right now today, somebody is going to, there's a handful of people that are going to be independently wealthy because they tied in with some creator.
Yeah.
It's kind of a collector creator combination. The creator piece is so exciting because that's where it gives, and I like the creator aspect of it, like you said, because, and I know we're podcasters and authors and whatever, but so we're still artists in a sense, but I mean, I still lump us with the musicians and the artists because we can still create things. Is that for the first time, it's like your community can be
your patrons. Yeah.
Right. I mean, and they can be with you for the whole ride. So you're super fans. I mean, you've heard the old adage, right? Like even when you started doing all
this, 1,000 you need, right?
You just need 1,000 super fans and your whole life can be transformed. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the key. Well, now that's that 10X. I mean, just the same 1,000, their lives could be completely transformed.
Yeah, they can.
That's the power.
That's a deep thought right there.
Because your 1,000 super fans could be, their whole lives could be transformed. That's the power of the community of Web3, I think. That's what gets me excited about.
And let's talk about that briefly, because, you know, as much as you like or hate Gary Vee, I think he's got a good point when he says that there's going to be a lot of celebrities that are going to go for the cash grab.
Right.
And they're going to create these NFTs that have no value, nothing. They're just going to be like, sweet, I got a bunch of money. Screw my audience. But there's these other people who recognize, like Tom Bilyeu, Impact Theory.
Oh, yeah, I love that's who I was listening to, the podcast.
Yeah, was that the one?
I was listening to Tom Bilyeu,
Yeah. So there's people like that. Reese Witherspoon has got a bunch of NFT projects. You start seeing these people that have a community with true benefits, and they're in it for the long haul. Like Tom says, man, he's in this for the next 50 years.
Yeah.
You know, and what they're doing is they're actually thinking of how their community can win from the NFTs. Just like you said, I'm going to quote you on that. You used to need 1,000 fans for you to be rich. Now, if you have 1,000 fans, they can be rich if you do it right.
Yeah, well, they're transformed. I mean, it can be that's the beauty of it, you know? And that's never happened before.
No.
In this kind of, it's never happened before. And so that's what gets me excited. Again, I don't have all the answers. I'm still going, I don't know where this is going to go, but I just know that I want to be in it somehow. Space.
Yeah. I'm with you.
And for the same reasons, like not for the cash grab, because I mean, the whole reason why we got into this, what you do and what I do, is because we wanted to create something of value. We wanted to make the place better than we found it, utilizing the talents that we're good
impact
at.
Impact people, right? Ignite souls. You got it.
Ignite souls, impact people, right? Everything that's in your opus, which I just, that still applies. But the playing field's just different.
And and that's kind of how we started. And I'll share that my opus didn't change that much.
Right.
All my opus did was I gave it a Web3 rinse.
Yeah.
Where I said, ooh, you know what I did actually, Richard, is I removed. I actually didn't add a ton. I removed a bunch. And I think that's a sign of brilliance. There's that one quote about art. A masterpiece is not completed when there's nothing left to add, but only when there's nothing left to remove.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. I love that. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's what makes Apple and Steve Jobs and his products so impressive, is like, he didn't just throw a bunch of stuff.
It's the whole less is more thing. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to see your next chapter, because I can tell.
Yeah.
I can tell you're thinking deep thoughts and you want to not ride the hype wave, but you're like, how can I create true value?
100%. And I haven't talked about it openly on the show, but I mean, I've been struggling with this, and the inflection point's the best thing I can see it. I'm trying to see where it goes. So I'm doing a lot of contemplating, a lot of praying. I'm like, what am I supposed to do? You know?
But that's so cool that you're doing that, because a lot, like I said a few minutes ago, the other people are hiding. They're presenting a great game, and they're like scared as heck behind the curtain. You just today for the first time, amazing. And I did that with my tribe a few months ago, where I said, guys, I'm the one who teaches you clarity attracts, confusion repels. And I said, I don't have crystal clear clarity. And I was scared to say that to you all. And I'll tell you what they did, Richard. They came up to me. They're like, oh my gosh, thank you. This, you know, we are going to go with you more now. And we're going to trust you more. So I think there is a time when a leader says something shifting, but I'm not fully clear.
I really appreciate that you said that, because that gave me more clarity on kind of what I've been struggling with, because I think that exactly encapsulates where I'm at. Because I'm with you. I always, even in my coaching, I'm like, it's about alignment and clarity, both for the organization and for the individual. I don't have that alignment and clarity that I would like to have. I see glimpses of it. It's like I can see see the light, but there's a film over the light, right? I don't know exactly what's behind the film. I can't see behind the film, and I don't know behind the film if there are a couple paths or there's one big path. I don't know.
But that is so refreshing. That's where I was. You know, you said you started in October. I started in March last year, and it wasn't until about December where I said,
"Oh, really?"
Yeah, where I said, "Okay, now I have enough clarity to start the podcast." And then when I started the podcast, you know how it is. You jump in the pool and you get more clarity. So now I've actually I've created a crazy project called The Great Metagration, and it has yet to fully be unveiled. But
a cool name, though.
Yeah, but do you see the name?
I love the name.
Migration and integration, but it's the great metagration. And I believe that I am being called to step into Web3 and bring light and ignite souls, because I feel like the metaverse and Web3 needs a lot of light.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, you did 7 years of igniting souls, but you're still igniting souls. So it's like blockchain life is kind of like igniting souls.
It is
2.0.
Right? It is. It's a Web3 version. Yeah. That's why I didn't truly create a new company, but I said, we're going to ignite souls, but we're going to integrate Web3.
Yeah.
And some of my authors have left because they're like, we don't get it. And I'm not shaming them. They'll come around. And if they don't come around, they'll be obsolete. I mean, just, you know how it is. I mean, imagine if a company said, we're not getting a website.
You know, back in the 90s. And there were people saying, in 1999, there were people saying that. I don't need a website.
Oh, yeah. And now where are they?
It's the same with, like, when I started the podcast 10 years ago, and there are 300,000 podcasts. I mean, there's even today. It's like, well, how do you make money making a podcast? That's always their first question to me. It's like, how do you make money doing a podcast? I'm like, let's look at it this way. And so the story I always give them is like, and I don't even talk about the cash that I've received over the last 10 years that can be directly related to me doing a podcast. I leave it up.
Wow.
I start naming off opportunities, relationships,
yes,
connections. And I can fill up pages.
Wow.
And I go, how would this have happened if I hadn't started the podcast?
Oh, that's so good.
And they're like, I go, it couldn't have happened.
Yeah.
I could have been a sales guy trying to get a conversation with the CEO.
Yeah.
But he would have turned me away because there's 10 other, Yahoo's trying to do the same thing.
Right. But then you invite them on your podcast.
But there's only one, or at the time, there's only one guy that was asking to have them a conversation to talk about life and leadership and what it really means to run a company. Wow. Now it's a little bit harder.
Sure.
You know, now there's 3 million podcasts as opposed to 300,000.
Yeah.
You know, saying you have a podcast is like saying you have running water, right? But in a sense, but it's everybody, but we're kind of at that phase with podcasts. Like, that's right. We're here.
Yeah.
And we know the power, I know the power of podcasts. And so it's kind of the same thing with the Web3 stuff. It's like, it's hard to articulate. I can just see, you know, that.
You see the shift. You just don't know your role in the shift yet. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You're doing the right
thing. And that's why I appreciate you being on the, having the courage to shift, to pivot, and to go down this path with authenticity and courage. And that's why I'm excited to see where you go with blockchain. Like, we need to be more connected, because I don't even know, like, I want to help you succeed.
Sure.
And so, consider me an ally in your journey. So
awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, I haven't shared any links. I'll just say this. I shifted our whole Igniting Souls conference in October to be Web3
focused. Did you really?
I did. So we're actually going to have breakouts, and I call it Wise Authors. So you can have Web3 track, influencer track, Soul on Fire track, entrepreneur track, or author track.
And very cool.
And I'm bringing in some great Web3 people. And I'll probably lose a lot of attendees who are like, oh, I just want to learn about authors. But like I told you, I feel like that's hypocritical for me to be like, just publish a book and not train them how to impact people with that book in Web3.
I love what you're doing. Kara, we've talked almost an hour, and I know you've got a hard stop here, but how can people connect with you? Obviously, I'll have links to your podcast, and I look forward to when your book comes out.
Yeah.
And when it does come out, you need to come back, and we'll talk about that.
It'll be fun. Just
how else can people connect?
IgnitingSouls.com. IgnitingSouls.com. Our tagline is Think Outside the Book. We help people publish and protect their IP and turn it into 18 streams of income.
You're the best, Kara. You've been a huge impact on my life behind the scenes, but thanks for coming on the show, my friend. I'll have links to all.
Watch your journey. All right. Thank you, Richard.
Thanks, brother.
See ya.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into the show. I hope you got some value out of this episode. If you did, please do me a huge favor. Tell somebody about this show. Tell your spouse, tell your kids, tell your coworkers. Let them know about the value that Dose of Leadership brings to your world. Go to doseofleadership.com. You can learn more about my services. If you're looking for somebody to speak, teach, or coach about leadership, I'm your guy. I'm known for my ability to transform individuals and organizations, teaching them the concept of creating a culture of decentralized leadership. I do think that is the secret sauce to facing all the challenges that we face today. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. I look forward to the next time we're together. And until the meantime, make it a great one.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.